We're resuming the interview, and Mel, I was just going to ask you about brothers and sisters. So you have a twin sister, Adelaide.
That is correct. Yeah, twin sister Adelaide, same age as I am, of course. And then I have had a brother, but he died at 4 weeks of age, and that's the only other brother. Then another brother that was still born, so there's only the two of us in the family, my sister and myself.
And your own family?
My own family, I have a daughter and a son of my own family. Then I remarried a second time, and I married a lovely woman called Marlene, and she had four children, and I treat them just the same as I treat my own children, and they treat me like their own father. And at present, we've got 22 great-grandchildren, and they're still growing.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for giving that family background. I'm now just going to focus a little bit more on your parents, and you've spoken about their separate arrivals, and I wanted to ask you, were there relatives in Adelaide on both sides of the family?
No, the only relative that Dad had, two nephews come out here. One was Vincenzo Ricci, he came out here in 1949, I believe. And Emidio Spinozzi, he also came out about the same time. They're the only relatives that Dad had out here. But Mum had three brothers and two sisters came out here after she arrived, but her three brothers were here before she arrived. They came out around about the same time as my father came out from Italy.
And what were they doing here?
At the time, I remember one uncle, he was a woodcutter. He was working in the forest cutting wood, chopping wood for, in those days was wood stoves. And I remember him being out near Blanchetown, cutting wood down there. We went there for a load of wood one day. And another brother, they lived out at Athelston, and I remember him coming and down, and he'd always come down with a horse and cart, or a horse and sulky. And another brother, Dominic, he was also very friendly with Dad at the time, but he left Adelaide in about 1948 or 49 and went over to live in Victoria.
Mm. And you grew up in a home in Paradise. What language was spoken at home?
I think mainly in Italian. Our language is mainly spoken in Italian, so I think I learnt Italian before I learnt English. And but I think it's fair to say that I remember Mum tells us many, many stories of when she arrived here, not knowing the words, not knowing how to speak. But luckily we lived next door to a grocer, and they had a shop at Paradise. And every time Mum went into his shop, he would not ask her what she wanted. He would give her bags of paper bags, and she would walk around the shop and pick up whatever she needed, and she would take it to the counter, he would weigh it and charge it. And that's how, I believe, probably self-service started, because people could not understand other people what they wanted in the shops.
Would have been much easier, wouldn't it?
It was all, everything was on display, and that's why it's so much easier today.
And what about your parents learning English? How was that?
Well, both my parents were both illiterate. They did not know how to read or write. But if I gave Mum a column of figures of 20 figures in pounds, shillings and pence, she would add it up to the last penny. And even though she did not know the pound, shilling and pence, which was 12 pennies to a shilling, 20 shillings to a pound, and so forth, and guineas came into it, but she would add it up without making a mistake. But Dad, he spoke broken English. Mum also spoke broken English, but she could speak better than what Dad did, as far as English went. But she would never, I remember her saying many, many times, even from Paradise, she used to hop on a push bike and ride to the Adelaide Central Market and buy her fruit and veg and drive and ride back to paradise.
It was quite a trip.
Quite a trip. And I also remember we used to ride on the push bikes up to Euraydla. I'd be on Dad's bike and my sister would be on Mum's bike, and they would ride up to Euraydla, and the hills were that steep, they would have to get off and walk, you know, most of the way. But coming home was beautiful because it was all downhill.
And what was that, Euraydla?
Oh, we had friends up there by the name of Mercarella, and Dad used to go up there. They were market gardeners at Euraydla, and Dad was always very friendly with them. And we just went up there for the visits, and especially in June when the pork season was on and they used to kill their pork, we'd go up there and they'd have sausages and salamis. And but every time we came back home, we'd have a bag full of onions and a bag full of potatoes also on the push bikes.
That would have been quite a trip too.
It was a trip.
Mm. And just a couple of other questions about your family. What sorts of occasions were important to your family?
Mainly Easter. It was very, very important. And Christmas time. Like Christmas was always a big family get-together. It wasn't just Mum and Dad and my sister and myself. It was nephews, nieces, anybody that was involved in the family always used to come around to Mum and Dad's place. Because Dad agreed to bring quite a few people out from Italy, even from Mum's town, from San Giorgio della Malara, and they all came out here, and he helped many people to buy land with interest-free money, and he also loaned quite a few of them. He gave them a plot of land that they could plant, and whatever they got out of it, they put it in their own pocket. And he was very generous in that respect.
So do you think that, you know, by the time that you and Adelaide were born, that he had, you know, done fairly well?
When he was at Paradise, in the first 10 years, he had done very, very well. That's why he said Australia had been good to him when we were born. In 10 years, he had a block at Paradise. He built his own home, had it completely built. And when Mum arrived from Italy, she had a brand new home to go into, and after 10 years of work. And of course, not knowing the language, he was prepared to work, but he did not work 8 hours a day. He probably would have worked 14 to 16 hours a day.
And what was he growing in Paradise?
I think mostly they used to grow root vegetables, which is parsnips, carrots, beetroot, and all that sort of thing at that time.
So did he have any glass houses up there?
Not at Paradise, no. No glass houses at Paradise.
Where did he sell?
No, well, everything was sold at the Adelaide Market, at the East End Markets at the time. They used to take all their produce down to the East End Market, and that's where all their produce was sold. And, of course, we left Paradise in 1946 and moved to Lockleys.
And why did your parents decide to move?
Well, I think they decided to move. They thought that there was better prospects of him getting his own garden and making his own work and getting the profits from his own work.
Because up till then
Up until then he was working on wages. But he said, well, I'm quite sure Dad has told me that when he started work, I think he was getting about £1.05 a week. You know, back in 1937, that was probably a great wage, but on today's market. But back in the 1946, when we moved to Lockleys, and we leased some land, Dad leased the land, it was 9 acres, and we leased it from Britton Jones. And it was actually on River Road, Lockleys, at the time, but now it has been changed to Findon Road, Flinders Park. And it was part of Section 411.
And what do you remember this area looked like when you came? Because you would have been eight.
Well, I was 8 years old, or not, just after over 7 years old. We moved here, it was in February of 1946, I was just over 7 years old. And it was very hot, and I know the tram used to go down Henley Beach Road, and we had to walk from home to Henley Beach Road to catch the tram, which was not quite a mile away. And the road in those days was not a road, it was just a piece of a small strip of bitumen in the middle of the road. And I used to walk down there, and there'd be a lot of boxthorn bushes, artichokes, and used to take us 20 minutes to walk to the tram stop.
How high were the boxthorns?
They were, on average, they'd probably be 8 to 10 foot high. And they were all over the place, but there were a lot of gardens that had only just started then. But walking from home to Henley Beach Road, I used to pass 5 houses. That's all that was between me and Henley Beach Road at the time. And they were all down near Henley Beach Road. And if you had one car go past you, you would be lucky to have 2 cars go past you on your walk. But 9 times out of 10, the car that went past would stop and pick you up and take you down to the bus stop, down to the tram stop.
And these would be strangers?
Not really strangers. They'd be people that lived in the area.
Oh, no.
You know, and they would know who you were, and they'd pick you up and take you to the tram stop, and you'd get off there and get on the tram and go to school.
Mm. Going back to the decision about why your parents decided to move here, was there no available land around the eastern part of Adelaide in those suburbs?
Well, I'm not sure. You know, I can't go back quite that far what the reason was, but I believe that this western side of town became well known for its produce and from its fertile soil. The Campbelltown area was very Baybisky, and in the winter months it was very hard to work because it was very sticky. And in the summer months, it would crack open because it was so dry. So this became the food bowl of Adelaide here on the western side of town, as far as market gardening went. And that's why the reason they moved down here, because when they moved here, they leased land, like I said before, and that's how they started their gardening experiences.
And when they moved, you told me earlier that there were other relatives who came as well.
Yes, well, when we moved down here, we had Mum's 2 brothers also came and joined Dad. One brother stayed for 12 months, and then he left and went to Melbourne. And the other brother, they worked together for 4 years. We worked together. Then my other uncle, he went and got another plot of land next door, and he worked that land on his own, and Dad worked this land on his own.
And what do you remember about the house that you moved into?
Well, compared to the house we had at Paradise, the house that we moved into was like almost like living in a tin shed. It was very, very small. It had 3 bedrooms, but the bedrooms only had 1 bed in them. And, except for the main bedroom, that had a double bed. And I think my sister, she used to sleep in the lounge. And I had 1 bedroom, and then there was a kitchen. Laundry was outside, the bathroom was outside in a little shanty. The toilet was out the back. There was no sewerage at those days. And it was very hard. But I think it was hard for everybody in that era.
And but a contrast, obviously, from what your family had been used to.
What we were used to at Paradise, it was a major contrast. Mm. And I still remember the day of the earthquake that we had in Adelaide, and we're inside this little house, and we had the kitchen sideboard, and the cups were all rattling. And I can still remember Dad calling out, get outside, everybody outside. And that was because of the earthquake. And the cups just rattled, and the plates were scattering all over the floor. Mm.
And what was what were your parents growing at that time that you moved here?
When we moved here, our first crop, we had tomatoes and beans. We only had 6 glasshouses to start with. We had tomatoes and beans. And then we were growing celery and potatoes. So that was our main crop.
And the glass houses that you first had, were they already on the land?
They were on the land from the previous tenants that were on the land. Yes, when we moved here, the 5 glass houses we had, they were from the previous tenants.
And the house would have been the previous tenant?
And the house was a previous tenant as well.
And who did you lease the land from?
From Britton Jones. They had a fairly large holding, all of this area from basically the river down to Grange Road, going back to past Jarman Terrace, I think even down past Gaskin Avenue. And I think that was nearly all Britton Jones, and they had the whole parcel of land from the river right down to Grange Road, and it was all done up in allotments and all leased out to different gardeners at the time.
And in 1946, you were only leasing, weren't you?
In 1946, we were only leasing. Then Dad acquired the land in 1953. He bought the land, and it was £670 an acre for 9 acres, which in those days was fairly big money. But at the same time, sometimes in hindsight, if Dad had if we hadn't moved to West Beach, Dad could have bought, with that £670 an acre, he could have bought 6 acres of land at West Beach. But in hindsight, who was to know? But West Beach, it was only sand and you couldn't grow anything. But land at the time was only $100 an acre at West Beach, and we paid $670 an acre here.
Yeah, I was thinking that would have been a considerable amount of money.
It was. In those days, it was. Going back, 1953, it's quite a few years ago.
Mm. Yeah. When you first moved here at the age of 7, where did you go to school?
I spent 1 year at Lockley's Primary School, and then after that I went to Burris Brothers at Theberton.
And is that what the trip was to Henley Beach Road?
Yes. To go to the school was the other side of Henley Beach Road at Lockley's, and we had to walk. And then when we went to Burris Brothers at Theberton, we'd walk down to Henley Beach Road, catch a tram, get off at South Road to go to school, then reverse and come back that night.
Do you know why your parents would have made the change for you to go to Maris Brothers?
I think just being a Catholic, and they decided to send us to a Catholic school, I think. That's about the only reason.
Did your parents go to church?
Mum was a very big church goer. Dad, he was too busy in the garden. He would, I still remember working in the garden with him, and if it was Christmas Day and it was 40 degrees hot, he'd be out working Christmas Day. If it was Easter time, Easter Sunday, if the crops need to be watered, he'd be out watering his crops. So you couldn't afford to, and the same with anybody with glass houses. If you had a crop to pick and it had to be picked on that day, you had to work that day.
And what about you? Did you have a role in the garden?
I had a good role in the garden, yes. I remember many nights when we had growing celery and that, I'd be in the packing shed up till 10, 11 o'clock at night, helping pack celery, nail boxes, because all our celery, 95% of our celery all went interstate.
And did your father have to take it down to Mile End?
At the time, we had to take it down to Mile End, put it on a truck and take it to Mile End, put it on the railway carriages. And if it went to Sydney, it had to go into cold storage. So you'd go down to a cold storage at Mile End, and then 3 days later, they'd put it on a train and send it to Sydney.
Mm. So your father had quite, or your parents had quite a lot of different varieties. So in the glass houses, you would have had the tomatoes and beans. Outside, you had the celery and potatoes.
And potatoes, right. Now, celery was nearly all sent over. We did sell a bit at the Adelaide East End Market. Our tomatoes went to the East End Market, and our beans, and sometimes we'd grow a few other vegetables that I can't quite remember. Peas, we would have peas growing now and again. Cauliflowers, watermelons, and that'd all go to the Adelaide East End Market.
And what about your mum's role? Was she also in the garden?
She was a big worker in the garden. Yeah, she would work alongside Dad day after day, hour after hour.
And in the kitchen?
And in the kitchen as well. Yeah, no, she was a magnificent worker. Then Dad had a couple of employees, and This was in later on in his life, of course, which were very good to us. And, you know, they worked side by side with Dad for many, many years.
And you would have gone to school with other Italian or Italo-Australian boys at Maris Brothers?
Well, I think at the time, I think the Maris Brothers school was probably 70% English, 30% Italian, and maybe a few Greeks thrown in as well.
And you told me before the interview began that you had quite a role with your father assisting with the books.
I did. I remember being eight or nine years of age, and I always had to write checks for Dad out. And I had to go and do his banking for him, and because they could not read or write. And he used to give me the checks, any check he got from interstate through the salary payments and that. I'd have to write the checks, you know, get the checks all banked up and take them to the bank. And if I had to pay any accounts, I had to sit there and write checks out. So I became quite adaptable to writing out checks and adding up.
And where was the bank?
The bank was at the East End Market, the ANZ Bank at the East End Market.
So did you go with your dad to market?
Quite often.
In the mornings?
In the morning. We used to leave home and, well, mainly my uncle used to go to market and not my dad. In the morning we would leave home about 3:30 in the morning with a horse and cart, go to market, and I'd definitely remember we were coming, you know, we'd get up to market freezing cold, and we'd go in the, Uncle would take me into the Crown and Anchor Hotel, and he'd have a rum and coffee, and I'd have a cold glass of water or a glass of lemonade. You know, early hours in the morning when the pubs there would open about 5:00 in the morning for the market gardens in the East End Market. And coming home from East End Market, I think I was about 14 at the time, and we're coming home and the Uncle stopped at Mile End, he said, "Go in and buy a flagon of beer." In those days, you'd go in and take a flagon and get a flagon of beer filled up. Of course, I went into the hotel with a flagon to get a flagon of beer, but they wouldn't serve me. So I had to go back and tell my uncle, so he had to go and get it.
And would you go to school after the going to market with your uncle?
No, well, the only time I went to market with my uncle was mainly during the holidays. Yeah, no, I did not go to school. I did not go to market on school days. It's only on holidays that we used to go to market, and that was at Christmas time when your tomatoes were in full bloom and your root vegetables were in abundance in those days, and your beans and peas. But no, it was only during the school holidays when I used to go to market with my uncle. Mm.
So when you were signing the cheques and doing that side of things, You didn't have to do it at market. You could do that at home.
No, I did.
And that went with your uncle.
I did that all the time. That was always done at home, and had to fill out the checks and write them in the book, and I'd quite often go up to the bank and bank them on my own. And I would have been about at the time I'd have been 12 or 14 at the time, and then we had the house at Paradise. Dad had that rented out. And I used to go out there once a month to pick up the rent after school. Catch a tram, go out to Paradise, catch a tram back and get home about 6:00.
You must have been a very organised young boy.
Well, I think I was told what to do. And I think in those days, you did what you were told. You did what you were told. You knew no difference. You know, if you were told to do something, you did something, and I think that brings the best out of a person. You know, when you're forced to do something, you learn every day.
Mm. Well, I think that's really true. How long did you stay at school, Mel?
I was at school till I was 16.
And what had you thought that you might do when you were at school? After
school, well, of course, your parents don't want you to do what they're doing. They don't want you to work in the garden because it was hard work, and they want you to become an office clerk or something. They wanted you to work in an office where you had a coat and a tie on all day, where you were nice and clean. So I went to work at, my first job in the city was working at Clarkson's. They were the glass people and they were building supplies and all that. So I went there to work at Clarkson's.
Where were Clarkson's?
They used to be in Rundle Street, on the corner of Twin Street and Rundle Street at the time. And then they also opened another shop at the back of Hymar Square, where they opened a shop there. And they also had a warehouse down at Beverly. And I worked there for 2 years, and then I got drafted in the Army for National Service.
And at the same time, would you have been helping out on the market gardens with your parents?
At night time, when we were packing celery, I'd be still helping out, doing packing celery and doing menial tasks. And on weekends, I'd still be out there, hoeing a row of celery or something. You'd always be doing something.
How many glass houses did your parents get up to?
Oh, no, we only had five.
Only
five, yeah. No,
oh, okay.
Yeah, we didn't, and we didn't, once we had the five glass houses, that was only as a sideline, because they were there and that they used them. But then we started growing. We had 9 acres here, and out of that 9 acres, it would probably been about 7 acres would have been arable because of the housing situation, the shed, and the water pump, and the fowl house, and the duck yard, and the duck. We had ducks and chickens.
And were they raised for eating?
Mainly for eating, yes.
And fruit trees and other things like
we
that?
We had fruit trees, yeah. We had apricots, we had nectarines, peaches. And most of the food that we ate was all virtually homegrown. And we had the grocer. Mum would put an order in for the grocer virtually a week in advance, and the grocer would deliver the goods.
And which grocer did you use?
And that was Grotty's on corner of Grey Street and Grenfell Street. Curry Street.
Yeah.
Corner of Grey Street and Curry Street. Yeah, Grotty's, and they used to come down. And I remember I was brought up on yo-yo biscuits. And Mum and Dad, they would buy a tin of yo-yo biscuits every week.
Like a big...
Square tin of biscuits. And I'd have biscuits with milk in the morning for breakfast. And I remember when I married Marlene, I had two of her grandchildren down here. One was two, one was four. And I gave them yo-yo biscuits and milk for breakfast one morning. And their mother told me off. Said, "You can't do that." I said, "Well, they loved it." And they still do love it.
So you introduced a...
introduced me, biscuits and milk.
Tradition, yeah. We were talking about your working life at Clarkson's before, and you were saying that you worked in the city and also at Beverly.
I worked at Beverly there. Yeah, I worked at Beverly for about 6 months. And that was mainly in the building material side on gyprock, kaolinite, laminex, and all mainly building materials. Yeah.
And at that time, who would your friends have been, and what would you have done for social life?
At that time, we had a great social life. Like I said, when we moved here, we lived right opposite the Ballastrons. And now my best friend was Ginny O'Ballastron, and Mum's best friend was his mother, Maria Ballastron. And, they just got together so well. They learned how to cook different dishes from different regions. And Ginny O'Ballastron is still one of my best ever mates. But then there's also others. There's Guido Rebley, there's Bruno Piovesan, may he rest in peace. He was one of my best mates. I've worked with him many, many days, and we've spent many, many hours together, crabbing, fishing, and we just had a ball. And then as we got older, from about the age of 17 or 18, well, the dances were in vogue. And we all loved dancing. And I think there were about 12 of us in the gang. I could name them all. There'd be Gidio, Guido Rebley, Bruno, Frankie Ballastron, Johnny Marchioro, Tony Panuccio, Frank Condo. Of course, then there was myself. And then there's a few others that I can't, the names just don't come to me at present. But we'd always go to the dance at the Bay Town Hall. There was a Burnside Town Hall. Railways Institute there on North Terrace, the Palais on North Terrace opposite the hospital. And we used to go to these dances all the time. So we'd go dancing at least two times a week and sometimes three times a week on a Sunday.
Had you learned how to dance?
Well,
formally?
No, not formally, but I would say I'm an average dancer, but not the way they dance today. No, like we used to do the modern waltz, the foxtrot, the tango, the quick step and all that sort of thing, and the barn dance. Of course, the barn dance was our favourite dance. If you couldn't get a dance, you'd always ask somebody up for the barn dance, but then you change partners.
And what would you wear when you went out?
We always wore suits and ties. Always in a suit and tie.
And did you have a custom-made suit?
And many of them. Yes, no, I had, in my lifetime, I've had three, well, I had one made for my first wedding, then I had another two made after that, which was custom-made. But nowadays, you buy a suit off the hook.
As a younger person, you would have known, or your family would have known tailors and Italian people.
Yeah, well, my three suits I had them made by Armando Urbani. He was a tailor up in Weymouth Street, and I got very friendly with him. And I think he made suits for nearly all of our mob, and which was very good.
And in those days, like you're talking about 17, 18 and a bit older, did you have a car?
Yes. Well, I had a car, which was Dad's car. Yeah, we had a Humber Hawk, which is an English car. And I started driving that at 17 when I started driving it. And quite often, Dad wanted me to take it to school. I think I took it to school about three times because he didn't want to take me to school. And it was raining or something, but that was before, that was just after I was 16 when I got my license, because I was 16 and a half when I left school. But then I drove around Dad's car and used to go to the dances in the car, and there'd be about three or four cars that Bruno had a car, I had a car, Guido had a car, I think Gidio Balestrini had a car, he had a Zephyr. So we'd all pile in, say, three or four cars, and off we go to the dance. Mm.
And your parents weren't worried about you?
Well, I think, parents always get worried. Yeah, and I think even me being a parent, I remember when my son would go out of a night time, and he'd go out of a night time, and you'd go to bed, but you would not sleep. And then you'd hear him come in the drive, and before he walked in the door, you'd be asleep. You'd be... It's got to be on your mind all the time, and I think every parent was the same.
And what about your sister? Did she have as much freedom as you had?
Probably not as much, no. My sister, she was married at 18 years of age, and it wasn't any forced marriage or anything like that. And I know at her reception, she had nearly 700 people at the Centennial Hall at her marriage. And when I got married, I think I had about 240.
Small wedding.
Well, I married an Australian girl, and and it was a bit against the old Italian tradition at the time. But then I'm thankful for the first wife I married. I got two lovely children. A daughter, she's just gone 50. She'll be 52 in August, and the son will be 50 in October. So they're at an age now where I've been.
I certainly have. Yeah. And back to your working life, what happened with Clarkson's? You didn't stay?
No, I got called up in the Army and National Service. I was one of the first in the marble drops.
What year would that have been?
1957.
Wow.
Yeah, 1957 I was in the Army. That was when I was just over 19... Yeah, I went in the Army in July. I was not quite 19 years of age. So I was only in there for 3 months up at Woodside. And then we had to do 3 years of CMF training after that. But I'll tell you what, the Army life to me was excellent. It was, you know, there was a lot of discipline in there, but I tell you what, it made you what you were, what you are today.
How did your parents feel about you doing that?
Well, of course, they didn't like it very much being in the army. They thought I might have had to go to war or something, but it was only National Service at the time and everything was peaceful. But then when I came out of the army, that's when I came and joined Dad in the garden. And I worked alongside him for 5 years in the garden.
And what was that like?
Actually, it was good work. It was working outside. It was long hours. It was early in the morning till sometimes late at night. But you knew you were working for a reason. You knew, and whatever work you put in, that's what you were getting paid for.
And did you have were any other of your friends working in market gardens at the time?
Oh, yes, there's quite a few. There's the Marchioro, Johnny Marchioro. He worked alongside his father ever since he left school. Bruno Pioverson, they had a plot of land down where his home was on Frogmore Road, and he was living with his mother at the time, looking after his mother, and he used to grow a crop of potatoes every year. Frankie Ballastron, he was in the market garden from the time he left school, helping his father. That's about all I know that, like of my mates that were in. Tony Panuccio, he was in the market garden for a little while. That's about all I know that was in the market. Robert Zarella, the Zarella boys, they became fairly big gardeners at the time.
You know, you talked about your dad working very long hours. Was there ever an issue about you being, you know, a young man wanting to go off and have, your freedom?
Oh, sometimes, but my dad was fairly flexible. If we got out early and did our work and we finished our work at the time and, it wasn't too bad. And of course, as Dad got on a bit later in life, he just started to slow down. Well, we didn't actually slow down. We leased more land. And
where did you lease it?
It was on Frogmore Road. On Valletta Road, alongside the West boys.
Eastern or the western side of the Wests?
No, it's on the western side of Findon Road.
Yes, but I'm thinking of where the West's property is.
Yeah, no, we were on the eastern side of West.
Oh, okay.
Where Yiki and I, Sam, were.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so we leased that land there for a few years.
You lease it from? Would it have been the Keels?
I think it was the Keels. Yeah, Mrs. Keel.
And how much land did you have there?
That was about 10 acres.
So altogether, you had 19 acres?
19 acres, yeah. Well, that's when we had two workers working with us full-time.
And what were you growing over?
Celery and potatoes, and I think we used to grow a few watermelons right up the top. Mm.
So did your land there go right to the river?
It used to go right to the river, and we used to get our water from the river. We had a bore, but we also had a pump in the river, and we used to pump it out of the river. And in those days, the river in the summer months would be virtually completely dry, and all you'd have would be these water holes. And then to keep the market gardeners going, they would open the Kangaroo Creek Dam, and they let the river flow and fill up the water holes. And we spent as young kids, probably 8 or 9 or 10 years of old, we spent time and time down the river galore. And I remember here with Johnny Marchioro, we'd go down the river and there'd be this hole there. We'd get buckets and we'd empty out the pool of water and get the fish in the bottom.
And what sort of fish were they?
Oh, they were mainly perch. Yeah, they were mainly perch. And we used to do that quite often. And we'd be there slaving for an hour, just bailing water out, getting the water out of the hole.
Very persistent.
Oh, we were.
What was it like having two areas that you were working on, like one, near your house and your home, and the other, not so far away?
Well, it wasn't far away. It's only about 200 yards away. We used to cut across the Ballastron's property to walk. If we were walking over there, you just cut across the Ballastron's property, there'd be a path that you walk across, and it'd only take you 2 minutes to get over there anyway.
And what about equipment and stuff
Equipment, yeah. Well, in those days, when the tractors became available, you just drive them down the road. And in those days, you could drive from one property to another property without having a registered tractor or registered trailer. But nowadays, things have changed. Mm.
So how long did you have the land on Valletta Road?
The land on Valletta Road, we've had that probably 6 years.
And when would that have been between?
That would have been, question. About 57
to 62, 63.
Yeah.
See, that's interesting.
Yeah. Well, I was married in 61 and I left the guard in 64. That's when we got out of that land there in 64.
And by that time, the housing developments would have been starting around that area, wouldn't it?
Yes, well, Ballantyne's land, they sold their land while we were still working there, and that's when they built Associated Grocery Store. They started building, then they just expanded and expanded, and then they bought the land that we were leasing at the time. Then they bought Ballastron's land, they bought Kill's land, Mrs. Kill's land, Dominato's, where Dominato's house was, they bought that as well. So they bought the whole section from the river through to Valletta Road, going back to where the West property was. West property became all housing. And the property that we were on, part of it became building for the grocery chain, and part of it's been left as a reserve.
Hmm. And when you and your father went on, you know, started leasing that land, what was on that land in terms of buildings or structures?
Not too much. There was only two little shacks where the Yiki and our Sam used to live. Where Yiki was, there was like the average house in those days, and plus a shed. And our Sam's property, that was just basically a house, or just a little, you know, tin galvanised iron house.
And do you know where they had gone?
Don't know about our Sam. Well, he would have been passed on now, but I know Yiki, they moved from here, they moved to Torrensville, and when he got out of his garden, you know, because they used to grow a lot of spinach and stuff and parsley and that sort of gear, and but they only had a small section of that land. They only had the front section of that land. They would have only grown on about an acre of land, and the other 9 acres was just left as fallow. It hadn't been worked for years.
And were they older men by the time
Yiki was, yes. Yeah, I remember Yiki, I know our Sam, when I first met him, he would have been probably in his 70s or 80s then. You know, that's going back in the 50s. You know, he would have been 70 or 80 at that time. You know, so same as Hop Singh. I know Hop Singh was still going to market. He was in his 90s and still driving to market.
In our next interview, we'll talk more about the people, the other market gardeners in this area, because you have a great knowledge of those, and I'd really like to be able ask you about that.
Yeah, that'll be fine.
I was going to finish off this interview asking you about whether you've ever been to Italy.
Only once, and that was only last year. Yes, I only went to Italy last year. Well, we went over there, we went on a boat cruise through the Mediterranean boat cruise. We got off at Venice, arrived at Venice, hopped on a boat, and we did a few ports around Greece and around Croatia, Turkey, and then we did a few ports in Italy, Naples, Rome, what else did we do? Venice, of course. Oh, what's the other? Genoa. Yeah, and then we did Monte Carlo, France, and then we came back home. So my only trip around Italy, I've done a few of the capital cities and that sort of, a few tours around the city. But I still remember Dad, he went back to Italy, I think it was about 45 years after he'd been out here, or over 45. And I remember him going over there and he came back and said, "Well, Dad, what do you think of Italy?" He said to me in Italian, he said, "Son, don't bother going over there. What they were doing 45 years ago, they're still doing it today. If you want water, you go down to the river with a bucket." You know, of course, that's where they come from in these small villages. And he said, "They're still doing the same today as what they did 45 years ago." He said, "We live in a country of gold."
Isn't that interesting? Yeah. Did your mother go with him?
Yes, oh my word, yes.
And what did your mother think?
Oh, well, she went to her hometown and if my mother was alive, she could tell you many, many stories. You know, like, well, they had a school in their own building, but she could not go to school. And she regrets that her mother and father would not send her to school. You know, for what Mum knew and for what she did, you know, she would have been magic if she had gone to school. Yeah.
And obviously would have relished the education.
She would have relished the education, you know. And she was, even to her last dying day, she was still cross at her mother for not sending her to school.
And when did your parents die?
Dad died in 91 and Mum died in 2002.
So they both had quite long lives.
Yeah, Dad was 89 and Mum was just on her 90th. Yeah.
And did your father ever tell you why he came to Australia?
Well, he came to Australia because his father was... His father died when Dad was only very young, and there was Dad, a sister, and two other brothers, and their mother, which was my grandmother, she passed on at the age of 98, so she was quite good. But Dad always told me, he said, when he was over there, they used to work as a share farmer, and they'd be on this property, but all they could virtually get out of the farm was their food to eat. And of course Dad did not have a penny or had no money at the time, and his brother had married his brother got married, and his dad's sister-in-law, like his brother's wife, said, "Look, Jack," he said, well, they used to call him Jack, but over there, he said, "Giovanni," he said, "this is no life for you. I'll give you." She said, she gave him £100, I think, or equivalent to £100 in money for him to get a boat trip to Adelaide. And when he died, I went through a lot of his papers, and he had these promissory notes, and he paid that £100 off in 9 months.
Wow. What a committed worker.
It was. You know, of course, you know, when you consider, you know, like you're only getting about £1 a week, and he paid that £100 off in 9 months. You know, but he would have lived on virtually nothing. And then when he arrived here, he only had a suitcase with one pair of pants, two shirts, a couple of underpants, and probably two pair of socks and one pair of boots.
A really hard way to kind of start life again.
It would have been, you know, and coming to a country where you knew nobody, you didn't know the language. But everybody said, you know, like people that probably might have, I know, like my uncle, he came out here probably 5 years earlier. And he probably wrote back and said, you know, this is a land of opportunity. And so that's when people started coming out here. Mm. You know, and of course, life over in Italy in those villages was next to nothing. You know, it would be the same as, you know, I think probably in those days it was almost a third world country.
And the poverty was obviously something that just forced people.
Well, it did. It forced people to come out and find a new life. Mm. You know, find a new life. But
Well, Mel, I think that's a good place to complete this first interview. So thank you very much for contributing, and I look forward to interviewing you again.
Okay, you'll have to get a few more questions ready.
I will.
Okay.
Thank you.